then I was like, screw it, Grandma. I'm gonna become a street artist, yo. I mean, most people see a wall and they just see a wall. I look at a wall and I see, like, a goat in a backpack.
Right.
Like a ninja handing out cheeseburgers.
Ooh.
A chill alien, you know?
Well, who doesn't see a chill alien? That's my question.
A lot of people. A lot of people. It's sad.
TBTL!
Anytime you can do something that's fun, you like to do it and make money doing it, hey, it's a win-win-win. And anytime you can win-win-win, you're win-win-winning, you know? If you're just winning or win-winning, that's just winning or win-winning. But when you're win-win-winning, you're win-win-winning.
Doors go up, doors go down. That's what garage doors do.
I feel like we're just like in that tired mode where you're delirious and you're laughing at silly things.
Uh-oh. He's starting that funny talk again.
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host, coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City.
Okay, guys, can we get to disc jockeying?
It's a beautiful, sunny morning here in the Bay City. The sun is high in the sky over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. Last night, the moon was high in the sky, and I was really, really leaning into my whole telescope situation on my front porch. I think I finally figured out how to use it, like, properly. Like, which millimeter of lens I needed to put in there. And I was looking at the moon. It was unbelievable. I was looking at the craters on the moon. Then I started just looking at random things in the town. I was looking at a Wendy's for a while. I was looking at a Dairy Queen. And then as I was swinging the telescope around, it settled on one of my neighbor's houses. And I was like, oh, this is the part right before the police show up. I should probably put this thing away. I realized it was a questionable look. 43-year-old dad type on his front porch wielding telescope at neighbors. But, oh my gosh, it was beautiful last night. Of course, that sent me directly to Amazon.com to buy this attachment that allows me to take pictures with my iPhone through the eyepiece of the telescope. So look out, world. Finally, we have a middle-aged guy who's getting into photography, and that is, I think, what we need more of in this world. Hi, everyone. It's episode 2961 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Which is going to be a good one, I can just tell you right now. There's a home in Manhattan Beach, California, which is just south of L.A., that the owner of the house has decided to paint some emojis on.
LOL. Laugh out loud. OMG. Oh, my God. WTF. Why the face?
And, well, one of the problems, the neighbors are very upset by this. One of the problems seems to be that the emojis have long eyelashes on them. And that is seen as maybe a possible reference to a person in the neighborhood who the homeowner has beef with. The emojis apparently resemble, in the eyelash department, a neighbor. And that neighbor is unhappy about this. So we'll tell you what's going on with that. Also, Hard Knocks, the HBO show covering the Oakland Raiders, the for now Oakland Raiders. They did not disappoint on the terrible, terrible turns of phrase. I will play you a couple of those. Speaking of terrible verbal decisions, I guess we got something totally wrong yesterday and we were trying to interpret a joke about Miss Piggy and Kermie.
Jokes are really difficult, I must say.
We thought it was a joke of a sexual nature and were very unimpressed, at least I was. Turns out we were wrong on that, and we've been sharp shot, and so we'll clarify on that. And also, what else? Oh, yeah. We've got an announcement of yet another TBTL event. Yet another chance for you, the public, to reach out and touch us, your humble hosts. So We'll tell you about that, too. Okay. All of that will happen as soon as we say hello to this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. A lot of you may not know the story of how this guy and I first hooked up.
We met on a BFF app.
We met on a BFF app called Pinder. It's for podcast hosts looking for each other. We both swiped right, and here we are. He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington.
No touching!
Hello, Luke.
Boy, that we met on a BFF app.
I tried to play the no touching thing, forgot my microphone. Yeah. What a disaster. I was starting to kind of zone in and out a little bit during your intro, but I am amazed to hear that you
Welcome to the listener's experience.
So you saw a Dairy Queen on the moon? How is that not? How did that escape my radar?
And people say that we didn't land there. Not only did we land there, we put in a grillin' chill. Although it is absolute hell getting supplies to that DQ. They are almost always out of everything.
It's like the Alaska of space. That's what I've always called the moon. The B-52s have a song called The Moon, the Alaska
you were
of
playing
space?
You were playing it on your boombox when I showed up at your house on Saturday. Wait, the Alaska of the moon. I'm writing this down as a show title.
Or the moon is the Alaska of space. Base, maybe, I think is what we're going for there. I don't know.
Give us options on that.
Oh, what did we go with yesterday? Because remember, we ended the show without a good title. And give me your honest reaction to this. I went with Hog Day Afternoon for yesterday's show because we're talking about hogs. I mean, is that a legit laugh or is that just that you don't want to hurt my feelings?
Yeah. All right. Attica! Attica!
It's a good movie.
It took me a minute. That's what the pause was me, because I'm so locked into that I Think You Should Leave sketch, the hog snarfing contest sketch.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We got to start the show with that tomorrow, I think.
Well, you said Hog Day Afternoon.
Yes.
I was like, and then I remembered, Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, shoot, you know what? Genevieve had an idea for what I should have started the show with today in honor of that. I played her. I know we're going to get to it later in the show, but you gave me a sneak preview of something that was said, one of those terrible transitions that are used on the show Hard Knocks. I gave the example yesterday, the made-up example of, while so-and-so was getting pulled over for speeding, running back so-and-so didn't have any trouble speeding down the field. Those are the kinds of transitions between scenes in the show Hard Knocks about football camp.
It'd be more like, while Callaway was being pulled over for speeding, Duke Johnson was having trouble just getting started.
Yes, that would be good. And also, look, I like the way that you replaced my blah, blah, blahs with actual football player names on the team that I love. Genevieve suggested, as soon as I played the little clip that you sent me last night from last night's episode, she said this.
He who questions training only trains himself at asking questions.
What?
Patience, my son. To summon your power for the conflict to come, you must first have power over that which conflicts you.
Okay, am I the only one who finds these sayings just a little bit formulaic? If you want to push something down, you have to pull it up. If you want to go left, you have to go right.
Your temper is very quick, my friend. But until you learn to master your rage...
Your rage will become your master? That's what you were going to say, right? Right?
Not necessarily.
Not exactly
the
same thing.
I love it.
But that is good. That's like the earliest intros, man. That's from like 2012 we started using that.
What's that from, by the way?
Mystery Men, a great movie.
Mystery Men.
Yes.
A rare Paul Rubens non-Pee-wee appearance.
Exactly. Post-scandal Rubens. And then he just kind of...
That scandal, by the way.
I know. We just talked about this recently.
That, right?
Yeah. We talked about this recently in light of... Fred, who's the other fella?
Fred Willard.
Willard, who found himself in a similar situation. And yeah,
but I mean, honestly, like,
moved on.
That's just absolutely terrible. Now, here's what we're going to do, Andrew, because we're already in this now. I was going to talk. Remember yesterday I ended the show by saying I'm on the horns of a dilemma.
About
something
that
I'm very excited about, but I'm also very I'm just conflicted because I'm really excited about something, and I also feel like my newfound morals are being – I'm violating my newfound personal morals with this thing. Now, I'm trying to do a couple things here while I talk to you. One is cue up a section of Hard Knocks where John Gruden, the coach of the Raiders, is basically – he's not quite doing what happened in that Mystery Men clip, but it's not far off. So what I was going to say is let's just do this. I'm just going to play you these two very bad transition clips from Hard Knocks last night, the season debut. And you had said – you were the one that pointed this out. I don't think I had really given it nearly as much thought as you had, but you were talking about how they just have the worst of those transitions. So the one I sent you last night, the Raiders, their training camp is in Napa somewhere or Sonoma. It's somewhere in, you know, Northern California in wine country. And so here's one for you. This is beautiful.
There's no whining in football. But every August, football comes to wine country.
There's something about the seriousness of Liev Schreiber's reads with, you know, with like the just like how bad that writing is.
Yeah, it's so
that's pretty amazing.
The writing is so tortured, and then that delivery, that the gravitas with which he
right,
says
exactly. That's exactly
these
the right
ridiculous
word.
Things.
Now, what I'm also trying to do, I'll play you another one here real quick. There was actually a lovely scene. I'm trying to find this Gruden tape, and you call it needle dropping, and I'm trying to do the visual version of needle dropping,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is hard,
yep.
Because, and maybe I'm, oh yeah, maybe this is where it is. Okay, I'll give this a try here in a minute. Let me play you another transition, though. Basically, what I feel like John Gruden is doing in this, when he greets the team, is he's saying a bunch of contradictory stuff. It's real rah-rah coach stuff, and it's not coherent to me.
I hate coach talk.
Which is, you know, unsurprising if you follow the NFL. Anyway, here's the next one. There was a lovely scene where two rookies, I don't know their names off the top of my head, but they go ride horses in a vineyard. And what's really great is one of them knows from horses. He's had a horse, which I'll be honest with you, he's a, you know, young African-American man. I would not have immediately picked him out as a person who probably had raised horses in his life, just based on how things go in this country. He knows from horses. His buddy who's with him, fellow rookie, knows nothing about horses and is terrified. The guy is also roughly the size of the horse he's riding. Bad day if you're a horse when the guy that shows up to ride you is almost as muscular and large as you are. But anyway, so it was really cute because these two guys were having fun, but the one guy was, you know, a little nervous as any of us. I'm not a horse person, as any of us would be dealing with this giant, strong animal. Of course, Andrew, they play Old Town Road, but they play like a weird, first like an instrumental version, and then they switch over to some kind of, it's not the one that you know from the radio. And what was really funny was one of these players literally says to the producers something to the effect of, y'all should play Old Town Road when you show this. So it's like, this guy gets it. But anyway, this is now after that. So they've been riding these horses. Old Town Road has been played, and now we are transitioning back to the field of play where one of the guys is bashing up against the tackling dummy. Take a listen to this. Oh, let's see here. Let me turn my volume back on and check this out.
They've been
riding horses.
Just because he surrendered the reins doesn't mean Jonathan Abram doesn't still have the bit between his teeth.
No.
What?
No.
That doesn't even make
that
sense.
That one isn't. That doesn't even bring me joy because it's so. What the hell?
It's the problem with that is it's illogical. So he was riding a horse. At no time did he have a bit between his teeth. The problem is he was never the horse.
Yeah.
He was riding a horse. He got off the horse. He gave the reins over. At no time did he have – we're confusing the horse and the rider in this – I don't even know what you'd call that. A terrible, terrible comparison. Just because he's not holding the reins doesn't mean he doesn't have the bit in his mouth.
And
still?
It's also like it's right there. You say – back on the field, there's no more time for horsing around. That's what you say there.
Of course. The time for horseplay is over.
That's right. And now it's time to get down to business.
But how does it, like, look, I know that I have this just really charming way of making all of this stuff about me somehow. But one of the things that I feel like I have to push back on sometimes when I'm doing my TV story job is a tendency to want to go with punnery And which, as we learned from our new fascinating friend, our Friday friendo, Lauren Ober, some puns can be fun, but like there is this.
I think her argument is that she doesn't do puns, but everybody just confuse pun. People just use pun in place of corny joke now, I think is what her point was.
I see. Okay. But a little, you know, a little wordplay here and there, a little pun, a little turn of phrase, that can be fine and fun and flirty. But I have noticed that, like, a lot of times the producers will – that's their version of humor or their version of interesting writing, and they'll want to put that into stories, and I'm really trying to weed it out. Nothing nearly as bad as what you just heard. But the wine country, that could have made it in to a story, or that could have been proposed. And I'm always amazed at the, like – we're talking broadcast, like network broadcast level writing that we're trying to do that. And this bit of tape from Hard Knocks is crazy to me that this made it in, because this is just illogical.
Just because he surrendered the reins doesn't mean Jonathan Abram doesn't still have the bit between his teeth.
So he was a horse who was holding his own reins, he gave the reins up, but he left the bit between his teeth?
Now, like, I know we're going to get into this later
on. How did that make it through edits? How did that get to the point where Liev Schreiber is standing in an audio booth in Manhattan reading it? It's getting recorded. It's getting put on Hard Knocks. How did that get onto my television in Bellingham?
I know we are going to clear this up later, and I don't want to like make another mistake here, but is that a sex thing? Like, are we missing something, like the Kermit and Piggy thing
Kermit
that we're gonna be figuring out later? Hi-ya! I will say, though, I'm on, like, now I stand on very shaky ground when it comes to corniness and specifically literal punnery, because I used to hate puns. I used to, like, kind of tease, but sort of kid on the square with our friends Rachel Bell and Sean DeTore, because they were just like, you know, they were so into puns, and I'd be like, stop it, that's terrible.
Went to that low thing in like Texas,
they
right?
competed in a pun contest. And I always thought I hated it, but then the more I worked with Rach, I think then I started, it was like one of those things where you start using a word incorrectly to make fun of people who use the word incorrectly, and the next thing you know, you're using the word incorrectly, supposedly. And I don't know, think about it. Like, think about the dang newsletter that I read to you yesterday. Everything is like pun with me now. Like, I am leaning on puns like that horse had to lean up against the stable after the big heavy man got off of him, as the expression goes. And so, like, I don't know. I'm a little bit, I guess I got to be careful.
Just because Andrew's not carrying an NFL D lineman around doesn't mean he's not going to make puns, I think is what
you're saying.
Anyway, so yeah, I don't know where I am on that. It's like I went from disliking them to leaning in on them so hard that I can't, because I'm with you. Like, I hear it and I hate it. And you're right. Like, if I was writing a script for television, or if I'm listening to a newscast, like on a commercial station, they have a little wordplay in there. Like, I really don't like that stuff. Yet, you know, I'm slinging them around in my medium. So I don't know.
Well, it's the thing that we say on the show all the time. If you wear the mask long enough, it fits. Smoking.
Long time since I pulled out
now,
that
should
imitation.
Should I play this? Do you want this Gruden? This Gruden tape is so not going to pay off.
I want to hear it.
I promise you, it's not going to pay off. But what if I've gotten to the right place? This is the kind of welcome to training camp, you know, speech he's addressing everyone. And I'll just play it for you again. Be forewarned that this is not going to pay off.
All right, let's get rolling here. We have a lot of business. Don't have a lot of rules. Don't be late. Try not to be overweight. Bust your ass and use common sense.
By the way, that's also the rules for working on TBT.
Oh, no.
Pretty much sums it up. I do also want to reiterate, I don't want any rookie hazing.
This is actually good. I actually dig this. I don't know if Gruden's saying this just because he knows HBO's filming or because he really believes it, but this was kind of unexpected and kind of good.
Okay, now, if you guys have them sing the fight song or something like that, I'm all for that. But be professional with these guys. They've earned that much. We've worked our asses off to bring this group together, to turn this franchise around and create an identity and create a culture that can carry us on into the future. The owner, Mark Davis, has a lot of pride, man, in the history of this organization.
And the weirdest hair of a billionaire I have ever seen.
What's his name? I'll look him up.
Mark Davis.
Mark Davis. Just Google Mark Davis or Mark Davis Raiders or Al Davis son.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. What's happening there?
That's the reaction. That is the correct reaction. Okay. This guy is, his dad owned the Raiders. His dad died. Al Davis was a very famous NFL owner who coined the phrase, just win, baby. And now his son, Mark Davis, owns the team. And Mark Davis is a weird looking dude in light of how much money he has to throw at the question of what hairdo should I have.
Yeah, because anyway. Yeah, I'm always on, you know, I always get a little
I know.
I always get a little weirded out no matter who it is when I'm like commenting on people's looks, but the interesting thing about this is
straight white male who inherited a $500 million sports franchise. I'm going to put him on the list of people that I will hairdo shame.
Generally speaking, I'm just trying to avoid it. But the interesting thing about this is what you said, which is he's not necessarily a handsome man, but he's just he's whatever. He's a guy of a certain age, of a certain weight, whatever. Yeah. But it's the haircut, which is very solvable. And it doesn't seem like, you could make fun of me because I'm going bald, but he doesn't seem to be going bald. And this doesn't seem like an attempt to hide any kind of baldness. There's nothing naturally bad about
his hair. Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
He has the bangs of Jim Carrey's character from Dumb and Dumber, which is, it's a great choice for the film Dumb and Dumber. Less great for being an adult person who's regularly talking to rooms full of people. Anyway, back to Gruden. Here we go.
And there's a saying around here, once a Raider, always a Raider.
By the way, I don't think that the guys in the room knew that was the saying.
They just, but what was all that noise we heard, though? They just kind of like.
I think two guys knew it, and then everyone else was just kind of going, watermelon, like trying to kind of play along. Like, I seriously think this, just listen to this.
Good.
Oh, wait,
good.
Sorry. I've already.
Back too
song
far.
Or something like that. I'm all for that.
Okay, but tell me if you think
professional
these guys knew always a Raider.
Much. We've worked our asses off to bring this group together, to turn this franchise around and create an identity and create a culture that can carry us on into the future. The owner, Mark Davis, has a lot of pride, man, in the history of this organization. And there's a saying around here, once a Raider, always a Raider.
Sort of sounds like, I don't know, and also with 50%. You. It sounds like church to me.
Exactly.
I would like to name the show, if you're into it, the Once a Raider Watermelon, because could that be a saying that we have around here?
Sure. That was, I don't know how many school plays you were in, but that was always the thing you were supposed, or in choir, that was the thing you were supposed to say or mouth if you didn't know the words. Like if you were in the background, I remember having a choir teacher, Lynn Hall, who was the first person I heard to say that. He said, early is on time is late, and late is unacceptable.
Oh, wow.
He also had rocking pit stains, which is bad because he was the choir director. So whenever he'd have to kind of like raise his arms, oh, God, these poor teachers.
I always heard rutabaga. Rutabaga, rutabaga, rutabaga. Ah, if you just want to kind of talk and say nothing in the background of a scene.
But I think if I'm remembering right, the watermelon thing wasn't, you weren't even supposed to make noise.
Oh.
You were supposed to be mouthing it silently because it looked like you were doing something. Oh, but I've also heard rutabaga, and I believe rutabaga makes an appearance in Waiting for Guffman. So I think that's a pretty common thing. Anyway, here we go.
We are going to be physical. Most importantly, we're going to be smart, and we're going to be relentless. You can lead the league.
That's what I said to
V's
when we first started dating, by
because
the way.
It takes no talent. It's just a decision that you make.
Yeah.
We have a chance to be one hell of a big story this year, man, if we put our heart and soul into this football team. We want to win, and we want to win now. Knock on wood if you're with me, okay?
Wait, knock on wood? That doesn't mean what you think it means.
No, exactly. Oh, no. See, dagnabbit. I knew I was in the wrong spot. There's another point which I won't torture us with, where he basically it's like on the practice field, and he says like, "You all dream of being here. This is everybody's dream, but I don't want to be about dreams. I'm about nightmares.
Oh, that's, like, yes, really? That was released. I heard that being talked about. That was a clip that was pre-released before the show, and I heard that on the John Clayton show a week ago or
like,
something.
And I want
yeah.
you to, like, you need to ruin other people's dreams. And
yes.
But then at the end, he said something that completely, and of course, I don't have the tape ready to go. He said something that completely contradicted the idea of being, I was kind of with him on the nightmare thing. I was like, okay, that's a cool spin. That's a cool freshening up of the classic idea of it's everyone's dream to be here. I'm with you. And then he said, but then he said something at the end that completely and totally contradicted it. But anyway, you'll just have to trust me on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, we could actually find that though, because that was making the rounds as a clip that everybody was talking about.
We're 10 minutes overdue for our break. We've pushed the envelope of our non-football fans, how much John Gruden tape they can handle
on
a Wednesday edition of the show.
Watermelon.
So how about this? Quick break, and then when we come back, I want to tell you about, like I said, yet another chance to come interact with us happening this summer. And also, we'll do our top stories.
And
so
what's the story that
anywhere.
You keep teasing? Your personal life thing, right?
Yeah. That'll happen too.
Okay.
I'm staring at the items in question
okay.
right now. So as not to forget. All right. All that coming up in a moment. This is TBTL.
Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Jiggle. Uh-huh.
Bounce.
Yeah. Let it bump.
It's the hard knock life for us. It's the hard knock life for us.
Is this on the Black Album?
Volume 2.
Okay.
I can't remember the order of things,
this
though.
This really takes me back.
Hottest cars New Yorkers ever seen, for dropping some of the hottest verses rappers ever heard, from the dope spot with the smoke block flinging the murder scene. You know me well from night.
Can I say something? This is going to sound like a made up story, and I only remember the details of it very vaguely, but I promise you, there's a kernel of truth in here somewhere. But I was hanging out with Jay-Z, and you know, he was like, boy, nobody could write a hip hop song using any lyrics. And I said, I can do that, and so I wrote this, and then they stripped my name from the writing credits. Also, a story related to this song, which is more true, is I was living in New Hampshire. I did not know this was being used as a rap sample, and I had recently uncovered some of my childhood records, including the Annie soundtrack on vinyl that me and my sister used to listen to, and I had plugged in a new or maybe an old record player, and I was enjoying that song, and I had no idea that it was having a moment outside of my living room.
Wow.
And then I heard somebody bumping it on the street somewhere. Again, this is whenever this would have been, you know, on the radio. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even like a hit at the time. This might have been after it had been out for a long time. I just was not paying attention to popular music at all for more than a decade. Black hole for me. And when I heard somebody driving down the street blasting Annie, I had just pulled out my Annie record. I mean, I was joyous. I couldn't believe that somebody was like totally on my wavelength. And it turns out it's Jay-Z. That's who's on my wavelength.
Or whoever produced it.
Or whoever produced it, exactly.
This is interesting. I'm looking at Jay-Z album sales. This makes me feel better about podcasting, honestly. So Reasonable Doubt, first album, major label album, I guess, sells 1.5 million copies.
That's one of
In My Lifetime, Volume 1, sells 1.5 million. A Hard Knock Life, Volume 2, Hard Knock Life, sells 5.5 million. And then Volume 3 sells 3 million. The Dynasty Rock, La Familia, 2.5 mil. The Blueprint, 2.7 mil. The Blueprint 2, 2.1 mil. Black Album, 3.5 mil. Kingdom Come, 1.5, American Gangster, 1.1, Blueprint 3, 1.9, all the way down to 444, 399,000. Jay-Z is, you know,
he's trending in the wrong direction. Is that what the
he's
point
trending
is?
In the right? He sold 400,000 of his last albums, and it's not because Jay-Z is bad at making music.
Mm-hmm.
He's a recognized master of the genre, and an interesting person all around, as far as I can tell. But it's like, this is like our podcast at one time, and this was more due to, I think, measurement problems. We thought we got 2 million downloads of one episode of the show.
Mm-hmm. And now you're starting to think
Jay-Z.
That was not probably the
I'm thinking
case.
That might not have been. I was Jay-Z Volume 2 Hard Knock Life 5
4.4 million album sales.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm Jay-Z 444, 399,000 album sales.
What's the name of his last record? I think I haven't had it for a minute.
444.
Oh, right. You said that, yeah. There was a lot of numbers in there. When you're listing his albums, because he has two trilogies,
yeah.
And then the last one was 444.
Which is absolutely the like the number one rule of radio that you're always taught is don't try to like don't list a bunch of numbers because people glaze over and they cannot follow you. And that's that's absolutely true, and the listeners just learned it. But hey, let me speaking of our small but scrappy listener base, we are only here because of the listeners to TBTL, the tens of listeners, and the folks that donate to the show. People like James McCracken of Fort Collins, Colorado. Kenneth Mejia of San Francisco, California. Sarah Montero Aburia of Taylor's, South Carolina. Benjamin Quick of Marysville, Washington. Ben Quick, that's a sick name.
It is.
DJ Quick is in the bleeping bleeping house. And DJ Quick is in the bleeping bleeping house. That's rap music for you. Did you ever have
a DJ
Quick
phase?
Oh, I thought
that was aphasia. I didn't know what was going on.
I cannot say more than two words of any DJ Quick song.
That sounds about right. I don't think I went through a DJ Quick phase.
I think it was a West Coast thing.
Okay, yeah.
Man, DJ Quick loomed large in my middle school years. Nancy Rohar of Tacoma, Washington, and then Vanessa Shook of Missoula, Montana. Vanessa's donation had us shook.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I apologize. Just lean into it, Vanessa. Just lean into your last name having a moment in the zeitgeist.
I'm trying to come up with one, too. I'm not trying to leave you hanging here.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's better you just
back maybe
away.
I should.
One of us needs to
exactly.
One of us needs to still be able to work on the show after this gets out. So I think if we need to firewall that comment off so that you are still able to host and produce the program. Vanessa, Nancy, Benjamin, Sarah, Kenneth, and James, thank you for supporting TBTL. We really do appreciate it. Wouldn't be here without you. Speaking of TBTL events, of course, we've mentioned the TBTL Summer Picnic September 7th at Woodland Park in Seattle.
Shelter number 5.
Shelter number 5. Lou Bega will be there.
Mm-hmm.
He's not invited.
Hold on.
He'll just
you know
be
what?
There.
Yeah, no, I just got a note from
him. We got to get him out. Lou, we reserved this. You saw the signs that we made.
This is a permit.
I know you brought a little bit of mayo for the burgers, a little bit of relish for the dogs, I'll stop now. Picnic shelter number 5, September 7th, the TBTL summer picnic. Bring the kids, bring the pets. We're cooking the burgers and dogs and fake burgers and fake dogs. But if you guys want to bring other stuff, go ahead and do it. Like sides and maybe some drinks and stuff. Although alcohol is technically not allowed, so you're on your own with that one. We will absolutely throw you under the bus if the popo shows up.
Oh my God,
100%.
If I'm caught drinking a beer, I will blame it on somebody else.
Yeah, I've seen you do it.
Yeah, listener Lee, look
it's
out, man. You're my
we
fault
got
guy
out of Australia. It was crazy that you blamed me for the fact when you urinated on that flight and you blamed me for being drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That was a veteran move.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the TBTL 3000 tour, tourable, thanks for asking, coming to a city possibly near you, Monday, September 30th, will be in Orlando. Wednesday night, October the 2nd, will be in New York City. Get a venue. No, seriously, I'm still looking for venues.
It's funny because it's true.
How many people can we fit into a listener's apartment in Brooklyn? And then Friday, October the 4th, we will be in Seattle. And we've already heard some – I heard, Andrew, that we've had some listeners from out of town that are already planning on coming to Seattle for that, wondering where is it going to be. Well, speaking of get a venue, we're still working on that, but it's going to be somewhere in the Seattle area is what I can tell you. I can't tell you the exact neighborhood because we're still working on that, but it will be in the greater Seattle area. Now, here's where I'm going with all this. We are adding another event to the list. We are going to be at the Minnesota State Fair at the MPR, the Minnesota Public Radio, / APM, American Public Media, booth / stage on Wednesday, the 28th of August. At what time, Andrew?
1:30, Luke. Did I say Thank that with you. Confidence?
Well, I certainly didn't know. That's why I pitched it
I
to you.
I am quite sure. Let me double check that, but I'm quite sure it's 1:30.
We're going to be doing TBTL at the Minnesota State Fair on Wednesday, the 28th of August at around 1:30.
It is 1:30 to 2:30. And apparently there's somebody going to
be after the hog snarfing contest and before yes. the nose whistling competition.
You can find us
right
in the wet
sweet spot.
Wet mud at 1:30
yep.
to 2:30.
So in the wet mud division, yeah, right. No casket for us. It's TBTL live from the Minnesota State Fair.
Okay, I don't know if you're going to like this or not, Luke. You can strike it from the record. But I want to do a little bit of managing expectations with this one. Can I just give the backstory about how this came around and where I am mentally with this? Our buddy, engineer,
Eric the Viking Stromstedt.
I was going to get there.
Help you along with this.
He mentioned kind of offhandedly during a totally different conversation, we're going to be at the fair. You guys should do like a show in our booth or something. And we're like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. So you and I didn't know exactly what it was. I thought
Can I give even more painful detail?
Yeah.
I was having a problem with my gear. I was in like Portland or something. And every once in a while I'll hit a dead end and I'll freak out because it's time to do the show. And I called him, like out of the clear blue sky, and was like, "Eric, how do I make the mix pre work?" And he fixed it immediately, and then said, "Oh, hey, BT Dubs,
BT
Dubs,
should
do a show from the state fair." And it was a totally casual, just, "Hey, you might want to do that." And so that was where the idea started. That was the level of sort of formality around it.
Yeah, because, you know, the Minnesota State Fair is a huge tradition there. It looms very large in Minnesota life, and Minnesota Public Radio has been a part of it for a long time. So I get the impression that a lot of our colleagues over there in St. Paul are almost like they're pretty jaded by the whole thing. They've just been doing so many live events there, and I'm not trying to make it sound like NPR doesn't enjoy their presence there, but I think I think what Eric was saying was like, you guys haven't had a chance to experience this yet. It'll be really fun and a real cultural Minnesota event for you, while a bunch of other people here, you know, we do this every year, so maybe, you know, it's not quite as new and exciting to us, is my point there. But again, it somehow in his offhandedness, it sounded like, oh, there'll be a little booth and maybe you and I will just be kind of talking to each other in a booth. This is how I thought it might be.
Yes.
And people might be walking by, like we wouldn't even necessarily have sound reinforcement or speakers, just people could watch a couple of guys do, like, almost like when you walk on the street in a small town and you see somebody broadcasting a radio station behind glass on Main Street, right? Like you can watch.
That was exactly
if you want,
how I pictured
on.
It. And a little tent. There's an intern from NPR. They've got some swag and some kind of like, you know, sign up sheet if you want to get on the email list. We're sitting there with a couple of those headset microphones. We're at a little folding table and we're just talking to each other. And that's the performative aspect of this.
And so we said, okay, yeah, we'll do it. I mean, that'll spice up the show that week. We're going to be doing all of our shows from Minneapolis and St. Paul that week. And hey, that's a cool location. Let's try it. Also, I just want to see the fair. And then
I haven't had fried butter in years.
Yeah, 43. Then we got a note, so we agreed to do it, and then as the email started coming in from like the engineering staff and some people saying, okay, then the deadline for publicity for this stuff is passed, but we'll get it on the website, and I'm like, oh, this is a little bit more of a thing than I guess I thought. I almost like wrote like, we don't need publicity, like we just want to, you know, do our thing. And then we got a long note from another colleague who's kind of like coordinating the event, and she's kind of like, okay, you know, there's about 100 chairs for people to sit up, it's kind of high energy, you know, we want to keep the energy up, you know, definitely. And it's seeming like a much more kind of performative now. And I'm fine with all of that. But I guess the reason I'm telling this to the listeners is I don't want people, how can I put this? This is such a terrible thing to say about the fair. But like, you know, you and I are going to do our show there. If you happen to be at the fair, you're planning on being in a fair someday that week, come and see us. But I don't know if this is the type of thing that we're like really pushing everybody to buy tickets for to see us. Is that right? Do you want me to delete this?
Well, I think it's going to be fun, and I think we're going to put on a good show. I think you're concerned that we have a lot going on that week, and that if I can try to kind of crawl inside your brain, I think that you're having this feeling of wanting to downplay it and wanting to not oversell it and not want to make the listeners feel like they got to buy a ticket to the Minnesota State Fair on that day, because then that builds the expectation and then that feels stressful to you. Is that possibly kind of what's going on?
Maybe that's part of it. And also because we have like a bunch of different events that we're talking about right now, I just want to, I guess I feel like managing expectations for what the energy of the events are going to be. Whereas with the three shows that we're actually booking venues for, like we're doing those as, you know, live TBTL events that we're encouraging our folks to come out and see, our listeners, because you kind of know our vibe, you like our vibe, and we're doing this for you. The picnic that we're having in Seattle is very non-performative. It's just a time we just like, I don't think we did a picnic last year, and we haven't just had a really chill hangout time. So that's what the picnic is. Just come, have some burgers. I'll be grilling, and we'll all be. What does Phyllis say?
I'll be watching through a telescope from 4 miles away. That's how I like to. That's how I like to do now.
Keeping an eye on those Martians and their Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
And so this one, and maybe I'm just totally wrong about this, and now I regret even bringing this up. I guess for this one, I was just sort of thinking like, and maybe because we have so many things going on, I just want people to know, kind of, I guess. I don't know what the vibe is going to be.
If they don't come.
I mean, it's kind of like I imagined at first that people would be kind of milling around. Some people would sit down and watch us. Other people wouldn't. But we're also going to be doing this in front of a bunch of people who don't know what TBTL is. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying. I truly regret bringing this up at all. And I'm trying to figure out if there's a way I can just delete everything that has transpired since you made this announcement. And I'm not even joking about that.
I think it's going to be a super fun time, and I think that we're going to try to grab somebody from the greater – here's what I think. I think that this is going to be a fun chance for us to kind of not to be stereotypical, but it's going to be a chance for us to be the fish out of water, the lutefisk out of water, as it were, and learn about Minnesota culture. Where is a more Minnesota thing than the Minnesota State Fair? And so – I think it's going to be fun, even though it's a little tropey for us to be like, how do you pronounce Shakopee? That's actually how you pronounce it. It's Shakopee.
Hey, but and you're going to do it the whole show in a southern accent, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that part of the deal?
If you can't pronounce Bemidji, you might be from Bellingham. Wait, what is the premise of this character?
That's pretty good.
Once you take the reins out, you got to keep the bit in your mouth. I am so confused right now. Let's just go down to the butter carving station.
Dude, save some of it for the stage.
Here's my thought. I am actually getting excited about this, even though I know that it's maybe a little stressful for you because of the fact that we are now – we've gone from doing like no public events to conservatively as I'm doing – 74 TBTL events out there in the public. So it feels like we're just every day we're announcing a new thing, and – I know that you probably, Andrew, don't want the listeners to feel like they have to flock to this if they've got to be working or if they've already been to the fair or if the tickets are expensive. Like, you want to kind of just make sure that people know that, like, hey, we're going to get on stage. We're going to do our best for – I don't know what it is. We have literally 1 hour. That's another thing that they're very, very – like, this is on a tight time window. So I think you want to manage expectations, which I totally get. But I do think it's going to be really fun. I think we're going to kind of like – we get to be the people from out of town who are going to be learning about Minnesota and the Minnesota State Fair. And I think it's going to be good. I'm confident about our ability to entertain mystified Minnesotans who have just wandered by, and then also a handful of the tens of listeners, people who might be interested in going – like they've got it like, we should go to the State Fair. Well, come on out on that Wednesday. Wednesday the 28th at 1:30. Wednesday the 28th of August, 1:30 at the NPR stage. You will see your boys. You already know what it is. You'll see your boys, Andrew and Luke, doing TBTL.
You know what I think it is? Let's just – because I can't cut all that out. Let me just say –
by the way, I put a break in there for you.
I heard it. But here's what I think is going on with me, and I'm being especially inarticulate today, and now like we'll just move on. When I hear that top story sounder, I'm going to be a new Andrew coming out of this segment, because now I'm going to start beating myself up, and if I get in my head
Don't
on this too much, the rest of the show is going to be bad. But here's the deal. I do think that – I guess I'm concerned about – I'm in a weird position where sometimes I almost feel like listeners are disappointed in us if we do a live event and we don't give maybe enough notice for it. And maybe I was trying to get ahead of that a little bit. Like, I feel like some listeners, and this may not even be true, but every now and then you catch a little bit of chatter. You get an email from somebody who's disappointed because we didn't have a venue picked out in advance or we waited too late to announce something. And I feel like – I don't want the listeners to feel pressure like, oh, Andrew and Luke are doing a live show and they only gave us like 2 weeks to get there in the middle of the day on a Wednesday. Like, this is a once in a lifetime. And I'm not trying to do anti-promotion here. I don't know why I'm like trying to do some sort of postmodern advertising, which is something that Genevieve and I talked about on our commercial show recently. Like,
steal this pod?
Yeah, advertising that tries to not advertise at the same time. I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm actually really looking forward to it. And I'm not super stressed out about it. That's not where it's coming from. I think it's more like part of me is kind of like, are some listeners in Minnesota right now hearing this and are feeling a mixture of excitement, but also maybe like, oh no, how am I going to get there? Like, now I got it. Like, they feel pressure of some sort. And maybe that's not even true, but I think I was trying to relieve some of that pressure.
Alleviate that.
Yeah, and okay. I don't think that any of that makes sense, but at least you know where I'm coming from now. Maybe.
Yeah, I think what happens, I know what it's like. I think what happens, you and I are both very sensitive to criticism. Or just somebody being disappointed in us. And if one person has at some point emailed you or gotten on the Facebook page and said, "Ah, man, I wish the guys would have given us more heads up," and that gets filed away in your brain somewhere as the disappointment of a listener, then that's just kind of banging around in there when it comes to anything we announce.
Mm-hmm.
Are we announcing this in a way and at a time that is going to in some way disappoint one listener because we didn't give enough advance warning or because the cost of attending the Minnesota State Fair is X or whatever. There, you and I both would like it that none of the listeners are ever disappointed. And as we whittle the number of listeners down, the chances get better that none – once it's just Lynn Pham, we can work very hard to make sure he's never disappointed.
That's right.
And so I think that's the good news about this. No, but
– that's why it's a P1.
I know exactly what you're saying.
The P stands for Pham. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I hear where you're coming from, but I don't want to dissuade people from coming out because I think it's going to be fun, and I think that let me see if I can.
Yeah, I'm done talking
Andrew,
on
what
this.
You're saying.
Yeah, I'm done.
I'm going to restate what I think you were saying, and then I'm going to play the top story sounder. What I think you were saying was we're going to be at the Minnesota State Fair at the NPR booth on Wednesday the 28th at 1:30. We'd love to see you. If you're going to be at the fair, if you want to swing by. Also, no pressure because it's going to be a relatively quick appearance from us. And you know, we're doing lots of live shows. So if you can't make it to this one, we'll be back in your town very soon. So hope to see you out there. But if not, no hard feelings.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Just one more thought on that. No, just joking.
I was so tempted to Columbo you. I was honestly, while the Top Story sound effect was playing, I was going between thoughts of like a joke to make about like, would it be that hard to come see us at the State Fair? I mean, come on. Like, but then I was just like, nope, this must end.
Yes,
this
must
end. This thing that I've been talking about and now have built up to be way too much of a thing. And by the way, Andrew, any regret you feel about the last 15 minutes of the show will be eclipsed by the regret that I will feel about the next 15 minutes of the show, because this is going to get overly detailed and it's just going to be Luke pulls out a telescope and stares at his own navel, stares at the microbiome that hovers above his own navel. Oh, that would be more of a microscope, but whatever. You guys just go with me on this. So you know, Andrew, that I am kind of into having more or less a uniform. I have a couple of different sort of outfits that I tend to wear. I have this blue shirt from Penguin that I wear when I'm shooting CBS stories usually, and Everlane jeans that I wear every day. I have a black Everlane t-shirt that I'm wearing right now and that I wear most of the time when I'm kind of being casual. And the reason I'm really into having my quote-unquote uniform is because I like to just not have to make hard decisions in the morning. I like to just – and also it's because I basically figure out something that I think is relatively flattering on me, and then I just go with it. Now, I have been for the last year or two wearing white Adidas sneakers. That's been part of the uniform. But there's been a couple of things with the problems with that. One, it's really hard to keep white sneakers clean. And so I have this whole hierarchy of Adidas Rod Laver vintage sneakers where there's the really clean ones that I will wear for like performances and things. And then as they get kind of grungier, they'll eventually be like mow the lawn shoes. The other problem with the white sneaker look is that everybody is doing it now. I think I mentioned this before, but I showed up on a shoot a while ago for Microsoft, and I'm not exaggerating. Between the crew and other actors in the show or in the shoot, I think there was four or five of us guys who had on the same uniform, jeans and white sneakers. Have you noticed that look out there in the world? Have you noticed that to be a thing?
Not necessarily, but I don't really pay attention to things like that.
Stan Smith, Adidas Stan Smith sneakers are very popular, and lots of people are wearing them. In particular, it's a sort of a look for a certain kind of a guy like me. It's like not skinny jeans, but you know, kind of somewhat skinny jeans or you know, I guess what you'd call them, slim cut jeans or something, and then white sneakers. That's a whole look. And I've noticed it's a whole look. And because now that I've noticed it's a look, I'm ready to get off the train from that look. So I'm giving you a lot of buildup. I decided a week or two ago that I have to decide on a new shoe as part of my uniform. And this is a big thing because when I decide on the new shoe, I will buy like five pair of that shoe. And I will then just make that exclusively the shoe that I wear. And so I decided I want the shoe to be black because it'll be easier to keep clean, but I don't want it to have a white sole. I told you, Andrew, this was going to be way too detailed. The problem with most black sneakers is that the bottom, the sole is white for contrast, but that white sole gets dirty really fast. And so you're back at that original problem of your shoes always looking kind of dingy. So I needed to find a black sneaker that has a gum-colored sole.
Gum-colored.
Can you picture that?
No.
How about this? Google Reebok Club C Revenge.
What am I putting into my search engine?
Nothing good. Google Reebok Club C Revenge Black Gum.
Okay, I feel like I'm being pranked. Oh, okay, yeah, like the beige color.
Gum.
Okay,
I didn't know that until I went down this road. I spent the better part of a Sunday afternoon researching all the different kinds of black sneaker that I can make my new default shoe. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to be something that was kind of vintagey because I like that look. And of course, I've got to be hilarious and unpredictable, i.e. doing something old school that no one's expecting. I'm saying that very sarcastically about myself. But anyway, I landed on these Reebok shoes and I ordered them. And they came, and I pulled them out of the box. And you made this reference yesterday, Andrew. It was like I was opening the suitcase of Marcellus Wallace's soul. I was so happy with them. So happy. They are exactly what I hoped they would be. They look really cool. I could see myself wearing this shoe, I don't know, for a long time going forward. It has all of the things that I want it to have, except for one problem. It is pretty much 100% leather.
I am
a person who has opted out of eating meat because I do not want to contribute to the misery of animals. I don't care. 30 to 50 feral hogs could burst into my yard right now, Andrew, and I would go out there. I would talk to them. We would become friends. I would let them live in the yard. I would tell Rudy, you have a new family, 30 to 50 feral hogs. I would not kill them with an AK-47 or what have you. I am very, as the listeners are tired of hearing, I am very pro-animal now. I don't eat meat. And yet, I love these shoes so much. I want to make these my new shoes. I want to go to there. And yet, they are leather. And I feel like I am the biggest hypocrite of all time.
I'm finding I guess suede doesn't really solve the problem, does it?
Yeah.
That's still the
no.
problem. I was looking because saw something here that looked like a different material, but now I see that it's suede. So there we are.
Here's the thing. I started my search for this lost Sunday And I don't mean like last Sunday. I mean I lost an entire Sunday doing this. I started the search looking for non-leather shoes. So it was something like canvas. It was like vintage black canvas sneaker, gum colored sole. I mean, it was like so involved. And I had found a certain pair of Reeboks that I liked, and then I linked from them to these ones. And while I was still in the search parameters that I thought I was in of not leather, I ordered these. And so I actually thought I was ordering something that wasn't leather, and they showed up, and I fell instantly in love and had forgotten that I don't wear – I'm trying to not really use animal products so much. But then it's like also if I – you know, Carrie and I did a softball team last year. If I go play softball, I'm like – I have a leather mitt. I don't know. It's like I guess where I'm coming down on with this, and this is a completely selfishly motivated decision. I guess where I'm coming down on it is I'm just doing what I can do. And what I can do right now is personally not eat meat. But I think I'm going to wear these shoes. And I know that that's massively hypocritical. And I know that the cow wasn't like, hey, guys, anyone need any skin for some Reeboks for Luke? Like, I know that that's not how that conversation went. But I think right now I'm going to wear the shoes. I'm staring at them. I really like how they look. And I don't know what else to say about it, but I guess it's just going to be case by case for me. But I'm going to recognize that that's extremely hypocritical.
Okay, here, I'm going to give you a very real response to this.
That's fair.
We're going to get into some personal territory here that I'm not even being goofy. I'm going to be really frank with you. I don't think this is super hurtful, but what I would say is what I've always said since you've been, you know, this was a slow progression with you about like you thinking about these things differently. It wasn't that long ago that you were eating meat. So And maybe it was like 2 years ago that you just started to say, I don't know, man, I'm still eating meat, but I'm just starting to feel different about it. And I always applauded your just kind of honesty and frankness, and just it seemed like a very natural thing. It didn't seem like one day you woke up and you're gonna be like, my new brand is I don't eat meat. It seemed like a very natural journey. And I've always said to you, just do what feels right to you.
Shut up about it.
No, I mean, well, no, I mean, not shut up about it in conversations like this. I think that actually talking about this struggle is I find it interesting, and I'm a guy who hasn't made any of these decisions in my life. So, you know, I don't think it's bad to talk about these things, but, and here's where it does get to be a little bit of real talk. That's where tweets like showing pictures of cute cows and saying let's not eat them, and now you're starting to preach the message of it,
yeah,
and kind of put
that's
that on
point.
Other
I hadn't
people.
Even thought of that.
That was a tweet. I'm referring to a tweet. If you didn't hear the show from I don't know what last week, and we talked about it, and I think you had mixed emotions about it, but it was you retweeted.
Yeah, I admitted
cute cow
then it was
thing.
Preachy, mm-hmm. But I didn't even think about it. You're absolutely right. I didn't even think about it in the context of these shoes. Then it goes from being kind of preachy to being like, shut up.
Yeah, and that's where I'm kind of like, and that's where I don't want to tell people who are like hardcore vegans who truly believe this, and I mean they have really good points, and I understand if you're somebody who just really feels like you're on the right side of history and morality and ethics on this stuff, and you're surrounded by people who are just like celebrating the killing of animals that you've dedicated your life to loving so that they can enjoy their 4th of July celebrations or whatever, and me talking about hot dogs all the time, like I understand that, and I will for probably the rest of my life, as long as I'm in broadcasting, we'll hear from some very vocal, animal rights people, and that's fine. But as you take this journey, Luke, and you're kind of like, well, I don't know how I feel, and I got to make my own rules for it. That's where I would recommend you be careful jumping on the train of telling other people what to eat.
Tweet deleted.
Did you actually just delete it?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm still looking at it. Hold on. I'm taking a screen cap. Because I was actually on your I don't even know why
you
I'm
son
doing
of a bitch
this.
I do not screen cap. You X out of that.
Let me see.
Browser.
Oh, it doesn't make
do
a sound.
Do not screen cap.
There it is. I got it. Show pick.
You got it. You bastard. No, but you couldn't be more right. I appreciate what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. It's the danger for me is not in living my life in an inconsistent way. The danger is me coming off as judging how other people are living their lives. And then living my life in an inconsistent way. I think that's a very, very fair piece of feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, good. I'm glad that didn't cause any ill feelings, because that is true. Like, I also don't want to tell people what to tweet. You know what I mean? Like, I also, in the same way, I don't want to tell people what to eat. I don't want to tell people what to tweet. So,
ooh,
you are what you tweet.
That's what they say.
See, I just, when I run out of jokes and things to say, I'm just totally relying on puns now.
I like it. I'm with it. Hey, speaking of which, well, I guess we'll do that in emails. I'm dying to hear about this Kermit and Piggy thing that we botched. But actually, let's get this other top story. Let's clear this one off the ledger, because you've got some real, you're flying in hot for this hottie of a story. You told me you were as pumped as I've heard you before the show to talk about this, or at least as animated. Speaking of animations. There's a house in Manhattan Beach in L.A. or the L.A. area that's now being called the Emoji House. What basically happened was the person who owns the house got reported by her neighbors because she had been renting the house out on like Airbnb. And Manhattan Beach is a kind of it's right by, as the name beach would indicate, it's sort of right there on the water. It's a lovely community. I'm a huge Manhattan Beach fan, actually. My buddy Cotter used to live there. I used to go down there a lot. But like a lot of you know, kind of vacation-y communities, people are upset at the Airbnbification of their neighborhood. They don't want their neighbor just to be a different person every night of the week. And so they've clearly passed some laws down there that you can't do short-term rentals. Well, this woman was accused of doing it. And so she was, we can assume, frustrated. Her name's Catherine Kidd.
She was fined $4,000 for violating the law.
And so she then hired somebody to paint emojis, two pretty big emojis, on her house in Manhattan Beach. By the way, she doesn't live in this house. She lives somewhere else in Manhattan Beach. This appears to just be a rental of hers. One emoji is the kind of... It's actually, I would say, the emoji that my wife uses most frequently with me, not talking about me, but just to describe a situation, which is kind of laugh-smiling emoji with its tongue going out, kind of like, what a world. And then I know that's not a good way to describe it.
Yeah, I actually was thinking the what a world, I think, was an excellent way of describing it.
Oh, good. And then the other emoji is an emoji that has its mouth zippered shut, like I am not being allowed to say anything. And both emojis have like large eyelashes on them, painted on, which is not part of the actual original emoji that you might see on your phone or whatever. There is the woman in the neighborhood who apparently reported her has eyelashes like that. And this is seen as a direct shot across the bow at that woman. The rest of the neighbors are incensed. They have been they've been talking to the city about this, and they've been told that it's basically her First Amendment right to have these emojis on the house. Let me give a shout out to our friend P. Fletch, our friend and colleague, Phyllis Fletcher, who actually tweeted about this. She was retweeting someone from the LA Times writing about it. She was retweeting an article from Alexa Diaz, who's a writer for the LA Times, a really good piece about this. Anyway, there's a city council meeting that the other people in the neighborhood were going to be going to, and they were going to be trying to get relief over this house. They feel like this house is just an affront to the neighborhood. I don't know what the resolution has been, but it seems like the indication in this article is that it would be pretty unlikely that they're going to make this woman paint over her emojis.
Yes.
Because it's her house. And I got to say, honestly, I'm with her and the city council. And like, would I want to have a house with emojis painted on it next to mine? Probably not. But it is not nearly the most garish thing I've ever seen on a home. And GHC. Wait, how does Jesus spell his name? G? G-E-S-U-S?
Mm-hmm.
J-H-C. Like,
Jesus.
It's her house. And this is like ridiculous to me that they're going after her. I get the sense that's also how you feel.
Yes. So I have a lot to say about this. And so okay. I'm going to try to slow down, because sometimes when I have a lot to say, I talk really fast and I then feel like I'm doing myself no services. But I want to start by saying I understand the rules regarding this kind of Airbnb situation. We have somebody here who doesn't live in this property ever, lives somewhere else, has bought it in this community that seems like a pretty tight-knit community. It sounds like most of these neighbors all know each other and probably they enjoy the community feel of it. And then you have people coming in with some extra money, just buying a property and turning it into not even like a long-term rental place, but basically a mini hotel. Like, I like Airbnbs to an extent, but I also understand why communities are trying to regulate these things. So from a neighbor's perspective, seeing somebody just kind of come in, buy a property, not have any kind of, like, I don't know, responsibility for it because you're living somewhere else and just having a bunch of people come and go isn't the best thing in the world. I don't think that I would rat out a neighbor for anything like that. If there were noise issues, I would probably just handle them as a case-by-case basis with noise. But I just want to say I understand where the neighbors are coming from to a degree. But these neighbors sound like such pills. And they sound – there's so much – NIMBYism isn't exactly the right term right now, but this is every single one of their quotes pushes my buttons. And maybe it's because of my aggravation with real NIMBYism that I'm seeing in my own community here in Seattle, and basically busybody neighbors who feel like they have a right to tell everybody else how to handle their business because they've lived in the neighborhood for a long time. And it just tonally, I feel like they are all off, and I'm going to go to the evidence here in a second. I do want to say that most of these little townhouses around here are kind of like painted beige and white, and they all have a look. Aside from these giant emojis, they also painted the front of this house a bright garish pink as well. I don't think it's a terrible look for Southern California, honestly, but essentially it's a bright house that has become kind of a mural with these two giant emojis. And as you said, they have these eyelashes specifically because the woman who ratted them out had these big fake eyelashes. And the artist who did this, they hired an actual artist to do this, the artist. And he took a photo of his work afterwards and he posted it on Instagram. It's been since deleted, but the original caption was, "Are your neighbors constantly ratting you out? Have they cost you thousands in fines? Why risk a case when you can send them a pretty message?" So there's no doubt that this was something that was retaliatory. Of course, the homeowner now is saying, "No, I don't know. I just like it." And I love that she's sticking with that story. She's like, "I don't know. It's my house. I like these emojis. And I'm, you know, if other people feel like it's, you know, about them, it's just not. People shouldn't be so obsessed." I mean, that's generally the vibe. And I do kind of love that. Because I'm a petty man. I mean, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Like, I'm a very petty man. Even if I agree with this law and I wouldn't break it myself, like, this neighbor tattling and just being a busybody really irks me. And so now the neighbor, like, the original woman with the eyelashes, the original snitch, is claiming that this is a form of bullying. I notice a couple of the neighbors keep on going to this line. It's almost like they have these talking points for the media. A couple of different people said, "Well, it sounds like the city council is afraid of this woman." And it's clear that they're trying to goad on the city council. And the city council has brought in lawyers, and they're saying, I mean, there's no law here. It's her property. This is not a homeowners association. Like, you can't tell. If there's some sort of hate crime situation where you're spraying things that are really inappropriate, then that, you know, you can – that can be mitigated and the law can get involved. But like, somebody decorating their house in this way on non-public property, that's your First Amendment right. You know, we have a big there's that house along the highway right in our neighborhood here that has a giant Betty Page, right? And I'm sure,
and did you see what,
like,
happened?
Pin-up.
Then they added Divine next to it.
Yes, right, yeah. And I'm sure some neighbors might not love that, but it's their right to do that. And I actually think now it's kind of a landmark.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude.
So anyway, let me just get to some of these quotes. This is I don't know if this is the original snitch or one of the other neighbors. It's almost like they're afraid of her. And we really feel like it's our city's responsibility to have these regulations in place because people can do anything. That's the most frightening thing. I feel like we're not being protected against bullying. Like, they're making this sound like they're frightened for their safety. Another homeowner who has lived in the tight-knit neighborhood for 18 years says she was the first resident to be notified about the emoji situation. situation. She says it was she was told it was kids' First Amendment rights to have this. But then she continued to contact the city council, and there's just a lot of nothing. They're doing nothing. We plan on speaking out about it because the sense I've gotten from speaking with council people since then is that they're a little bit reluctant to take action. I think the city is afraid of her coming after them. This is the second person to accuse them of being afraid. To me, there's just so many ways the cities could step in if they wanted to. At this point, there's no neutral for the city. Not taking action is condoning this. And do we really as a community want to condone this? Like, yeah, I do. You got, yeah. Girl. That's what happened. You got. Suck it up. Like, this is the perfect petty revenge. And these people trying to turn it into something like the city isn't protecting them from bullying is such crap.
Yeah, it's like, look, you reported... I actually don't as a
safety as a homeowner. Issues. I'm sorry. They're also claiming safety issues because so many people are pulling over to take photos of it. Now it's causing traffic congestion. Silly. It's just such bullshit. They're trying desperately to create some sort of like an actual actionable thing for the city council to take action on. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. Like no. But I like it. This is good. My feeling is. And as a like a homeowner and as a kind of a, I don't know, probably more of a NIMBY person than I would like to think I am, if I'm trying to think of the Airbnb thing wouldn't totally apply to our home and our neighborhood. But let's just say if something was going on in the neighborhood and it was really upsetting to me, I might report it. So I don't even have a problem with the woman reporting the Airbnbification of the house. The neighbor with the eyelashes, Becky with the good lashes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, okay. And so then the owner had to pay a $4,000 fine and presumably is not. And they mentioned in the article that the home seems occupied, but it's not Airbnb, So in other words, she got, you know, punished. She got fined. She had to pay the fine presumably. And she's not Airbnb-ing the house. I don't even have a problem with the neighbor reporting her. But like you said, turnabout is fair play. I think the reporting was appropriate. I think the fine was appropriate. I think the fact that she's not Airbnb-ing it out is appropriate. I think she's also allowed to put some dingus emojis on her pink house now. Like, this is how it works. You know, you mess with the bull, you got the emojis.
And you know what really bugs me is there's a bit of hypocriticalness. That's hypocrisy. I got there. Everybody calm down. Yeah. There's a bit of hypocrisy here, too. These are the types. I'm going to read another quote from another really concerned neighbor, Luke. And this person is saying, I believe generally that people should be able to do what they want with their property within the guidelines of the city without governmental interference, including painting their exterior. But this situation is not about the right of the homeowner. It's about one homeowner saying F you to the person she blames for her plight and F you to the rest of the street. Those two things cannot exist at the same time. I hate the hypocrisy. Like, I hate it when people think they believe in one thing until they don't like what they see. And that gets to it. And that's what I think I see in, like, especially in neighborhoods like Wallingford, where I used to live. Any kind of change and you just hear people say, oh, no, like, no, I'm a good liberal. I believe in this. Right. Oh, but. Yeah. I don't know. We don't want a homeless person in our neighborhood, which I know I'm taking this in a very weird place. But like, it was just kind of that like attitude of like, oh, no, like peace. If you come in here, we accept all kinds with peace and love no matter what. But then it'll be like, oh, there's one person who doesn't make $100,000 walking down your street. Next thing you know, you're on Nextdoor.com saying somebody call the cops. I'm scared. You know what I mean? And I just feel like there's a bit of this in here. I'm bringing a lot of baggage to this story.
Yeah. Well, I will also say that, like, this is not the first time something like this has happened where there's been a disagreement between neighbors and one of them has decided to put up some sort of signage. Like, this is not, to that quote you were reading, this isn't, like, did they say this is an FU to the neighborhood? It's like, if it is, it's subtle. It's an FU in the form of eyelashes on an emoji.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what she could have painted on her house? FU. She could have literally.
Yeah.
Written out the words, and I've seen that before in news articles, and like she could have literally just painted, you know, F you to the name of the person who reported her and put a big arrow on her house pointing at the other lady's house. Like, there are much more direct ways that, I mean, honestly, she took a kind of like subtle, I don't know if
funny.
Playful is the right word.
Yeah, playful is
kind
the
of
right
funny.
Word. Yeah.
Like, what we're talking about here is the eyelashes on the emoji. It is so far from being an obvious F you. Like, if you're driving down the street and you see and you were to see that house, you would, in other than the neighbors freaking out about it, you would never get the backstory on those eyelashes. You would just be like, oh, that's a quirky home in this quirky beach community. When I say quirky, it's like every home is $2 million. But, like, still, other than them calling attention to it, you would never get the subtext. And so the idea that this is – like, she could have literally just painted F-U-C-K in, you know – 20-foot high letters on her house. She didn't do that.
I wonder, though, then you might get into community guidelines. I mean, that's where I think she's just being so smart. Like, she's not acknowledging that this is revenge in any way. She did something that is within the guidelines of the community, because I do think that I'll bet you a million bucks there is a way, like, if somebody has something that is offensive by community standards, I'll bet you there is a way to, like, have the courts
take that down.
There probably
is, just in the city of Manhattan Beach, mm-hmm. but what I don't think this is, at least I didn't see any indication of this, this is not like one of those communities where there's covenants, which is like, that is, you want to talk about wild, these developments where it's like you literally can't paint your house the color you want to paint it. I'm not talking about emojis, right. Just like, yeah. If you're like one shade off of the like agreed upon beige, mm-hmm. like, or you, yep. you know, you want to put a fence, or you want to like put a some kind of a, you know, thing on your fence so that people can't see into your backyard. I mean, that would honestly, I would rather, I don't want to say die, but I would, the last place I would ever want to live would be one of those weird nightmare developments where there are all kinds of covenants. I don't think that's going on here. Not that that's what you were saying, but I'm sure that the city of Manhattan Beach has some code somewhere, which you're right. They're clearly trying to make the argument that this is not just like funky art, which is what I think it is, but that it's actually somehow a danger, because that's what they figure, like traffic. There's too many news vans mm-hmm. coming down our street and people stopping to take pictures. I bet you, I mean, maybe it's changed because of this LA Times article, but I bet you if you sat there on an average Tuesday, I bet you it would be one or two people in the whole day that came by to take a picture.
Yeah.
I doubt it's an actual, but what they're trying to do is they're figuring out the part of the law that they think might apply to this, and they're trying to kind of reverse engineer their argument.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know.
I truly believe people should be able to do whatever they want with the exterior of their houses. Except I don't like this one. It hurts my feelings. Also, everybody come out to the state fair while we're hot here. You know what? Everybody come out. The 28th
Andrew's
of August.
Andrew's got a tight 20 on persnickety homeowners.
That's right.
In what's another community in the greater Minnesota area? How many cities outside of Minneapolis or St. Paul do you think you could name? Because for me, I've learned it's two.
None. St. Cloud.
Shakopee and Bemidji.
St. Cloud.
Ooh,
because
St. Cloud.
That's where the Steubauten fam live.
Okay, I'm going to try to name 30 Minnesota cities.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding.
All back.
Oh, shoot. Let's see. Can I name five? Not counting Minneapolis, St. Paul, or my two go-tos, Shakopee and Bemidji, also taking St. Cloud out. What does that leave me? Duluth?
There you go.
Who loves you, baby? Duluth does. Okay. How about there's got to be a place.
Is there a town called Hypocriticalness?
Yep, there is. That's actually St. Cloud.
Oh, okay.
That's a joke just for Steve.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's got to be a place called White Bear Lake. I'm just guessing. How about, are there cities up in the Boundary Waters area?
There's White Bear Lake, Minnesota. I'm looking at it.
That was an educated guess.
Yeah. I love it. You want to hear about it?
Tell me about it, 'cause I can't think of any more cities, so let's change the topic.
It's in Ramsey County. A small portion of the city also extends into Washington County. Population about almost 24,000 people. Located on White Bear Lake, one of the largest lakes in Minneapolis, St. Paul metropolitan area. You must have seen something at some point that probably.
I think I was piecing together. Oh. Fargo. No, that's North Dakota.
Yeah.
Sorry. Let's just get out of this.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
We got a whole nother episode, or I should say edition, of the TBTL universe to record after this.
Oh, that's right.
Andrew, which I want to mention to the listeners, as you're hearing this, this is another reminder that if you would like to listen to Macmillan Men, it's going to be showing up in your feed at some point. It's our podcast about the Amazon TV show Patriot. And if you have not watched the show, Andrew and I are huge fans, and you might want to check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. This is also serving as some sort of ad for them, because you got to, I guess, subscribe. But Patriot, we're going to go episode by episode. So you still have time to watch season one, episode one of Patriot. And then listen to that show that'll be coming your way very soon.
I'm very excited about that. It was so nice to dip back into that world last night.
I enjoyed it more than I mean, I don't like to watch things multiple times usually, with some exception. And so I have to admit, when I was like, I've already seen this, am I going to enjoy it? But I quite enjoyed it. And I picked up a bunch of stuff that I didn't pick
up
the first time.
Yeah, more on that in the show. Exactly. That's what I want to talk to you about. It really felt like a flawless episode once you know what else is going to happen. But we'll talk about that
now,
in that show.
Onto a more negative topic, our complete and total misunderstanding of this Kermit and Piggy joke?
Yes. So the joke, I was telling a bunch of pig-related jokes on the show yesterday, and these were things that I had pulled off the internet, put in a newsletter a while back, and I was sharing them with Luke. And one of them was, what do you get when you cross a frog and a pig? And the answer is a lifetime ban from the Muppet Show studio. And you and I got into a long conversation about how it didn't seem like this really made sense. Like, why are we, like, again, this is where we were thinking, was it animal husbandry? Are we forcing them to, like, crossbreed? It just seemed like a weird joke. Well, suffice it to say, jokes are very difficult.
But they are, it turns out. I thought it was saying, when you were crossing them, you were basically letting Kermit and Piggy finally, will they or won't they? And you were letting them, will they? You were having these two puppets, F-U-C-K.
Because that's like these jokes, like, what do you get? I mean, now I can't think of one, but, like, you know, the jokes are usually follow the format of you're taking the characteristic of one thing and a characteristic of another thing, and then together combined, you come up with some punny answer that makes children and some adults laugh. But I just didn't get this one. So anyway, we got a lot of emails, a couple of voicemails, some Slack messages from people explaining to us that we did not get it.
Oh, hey guys, I just wanted to pop in for a minute and explain the pig joke from yesterday's show. I believe that you guys misinterpreted the punchline of the joke that went, what do you get when you cross a pig and a frog? Lifetime ban from the Muppet Show. I believe you interpreted it as some kind of animal husbandry joke, and I believe what they were really getting at was crossing as in, you know, getting on the bad side of, getting on the wrong side of. So what do you get when you cross a pig, you know, Miss Piggy, and a frog, Kermit, who are both in charge of the Muppet Show? Well, if you get on their bad side, you're definitely not being invited back. Anyway, that's all I got. Power out.
Yeah, a lot of people. Brian in Tallahassee wrote a nice email saying the same thing, saying it like in this case the word cross means to affront, and that makes a lot more sense. That does make a lot more sense now.
Kind of. Listen, I'm not disagreeing with the listeners. I'm sure they're right, but it's not a good. It remains a bad joke.
Okay, I'll go with you on that. So, yeah, sure.
It's so tortured. Like I was thinking that. Because you told me we were wrong, and I was like, okay, well, then I'm going to hear an explanation that makes the joke work better. I still feel like the joke is – because – so Kermit and Miss Piggy are in charge of the Muppets? Isn't that Jim Henson? Like, I think there's a real question
no,
about the flowchart.
No, actually, I disagree with you on that. It's been a long time since I've seen that. But I do remember – I thought that Kermit had some sort of a managerial role. I thought he was always trying to corral the other Muppets, and he's always trying to keep the show going on. I don't know if he's a director or what. But in that universe, I do think that he is in some sort of leadership role. And Piggy is just a okay. big boss. I mean, you don't want to cross – I think we can all agree that you don't want to cross Miss Piggy.
Yeah, I don't know. I just still think I still think the joke is – and I know from a tortured joke because that's what I do. That's my brand. I think the joke is very tortured. And it's not. I'm not being defensive because we got it wrong. I think our version of the joke is better though, honestly.
Can I play for you – I have a – I don't know how much time we have here. I know we got to get to McMillan Men. Let me play for you at least one more voicemail here. I thought this was interesting. You know – I don't know if I should play this, but this is also the episode where I was talking about a different live event in ways that I completely regret. So maybe I can let a listener describe a live event that is related to something that we are doing, which is the Thing Festival. Listener Kristen here isn't weighing in on our TBTL performance at the Thing Festival. She wants to address the Napoleon Dynamite live panel discussion thing that you're moderating.
Okay.
You said you kind of don't exactly know how to picture it. And Kristen says she does because she's been to one of these things.
Oh.
Hey, guys. It is Kristen in Kansas City. I've met you at the Greyhound Station fame. And I am calling to tell Luke about my experience at the Napoleon Dynamite live event in Kansas City. To give him some context for what to expect, I actually won free tickets to the event, and my brother
Lucky.
And I liked the movie, so I was like, hey, let's go. It'll be silly. It's probably going to be like 200 people, and, you know, it'll just be something random to do on a Friday night in Kansas City. And turns out, holy cow, there are still a lot of people who are very much in love with Napoleon Dynamite. We were in the Kauffman Center, which is our big performing arts center. I think I actually pointed it out to you guys when we were in town. The building kind of looks like a little bit reminiscent of the Sydney Opera House. But anyway, this is the same theater where they do touring musicals, where they do the Nutcracker every year. And so I don't know the exact capacity, but it fits a lot of people, and it was full, like all three balconies of people to see Napoleon Dynamite live. And they had a llama outside that you could take pictures with.
Dana,
there
you
were
fat
tons
lard.
Of people
These
in
are all my
costume,
impressions I'm gonna do.
Mostly Napoleon, but also Uncle Rico, Pedro. It was really something. And as far as the actual on-stage event after, so they show the movie first, and then the actors come out afterward, and it was really painfully awkward, I will tell you, not only because of how, like, jazzed a lot of people in the audience were to be able to ask questions, but also just how kind of awkward the actors were. They were doing a lot of gags that you could tell maybe they had rehearsed and done over and over again. So we actually left like maybe 10, 15 minutes into the Q&A portion because it was just embarrassing. But yeah, just wanted to give you a heads up on maybe what you might expect with that event. So if you have any wiggle room on that $500, you might want to push it. All right, see you guys later. Bye.
I love her frankness.
I forgot that I said how much I'm getting paid for it. I gotta start having some keeping some things to myself.
You and me both.
It's like,
boy.
How does she know that? Well, that does and doesn't clear things up for me. Like, it establishes that people will be excited about it, which I expected. It establishes that it's a Q&A, as opposed to when they say Napoleon Dynamite Live, you wonder, are they going to like come out and do a couple scenes and then I'm going to try to talk to them? Sounds like it's probably why that my part of it is at 10:30, because they probably show the film first and then I'm, you know, going to be on stage talking to them. I what I really need to do is talk to their manager and find out what they think the thing is going to be, because if they're going to do a bunch of like planned bits, I'm fine with that. Obviously, it's their show, but I'll just really stay out of the way on that. But if they want me to interview them, I don't know. I feel this is probably overconfident. I feel like I will be able to make it not awkward up there. I am not confident about many things in my life, but I am confident about my ability to be on stage with people and have conversations and have it not be super awkward. But I've never tried to interview Uncle Rico when he keeps threatening to throw a football over a mountain, so I don't know.
And it might just be good, though, to have that kind of like, I mean, listen, I don't know why I'm telling you how to do this. You do this. I don't. But for me, kind of getting just a little bit of sense of like, oh, okay, though, I should be prepared for this. Not that you wouldn't be prepared for it anyway, but just kind of knowing, okay, this could get awkward, so I'm going to have to really go out with maybe even a tiny bit more energy than usual, or maybe a couple more go-tos than maybe I would have, just thinking, ah, these are all a bunch of actors and they don't care if I'm here anyway. I'm just going to, like, you know, go out there and wing it. Like, it just kind of gives you a little bit more of an idea of what to gear up for and what maybe some of the pitfalls could be.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, basically, if I get the crowd to stay for more than 15 minutes into the Q&A, it's a win.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Bar has been set very low.
I'm not going to share it with you now because it's kind of long, but I will promote this for tomorrow's show. Speaking of the Thing Festival, you and I were talking about how they offered a writer consideration for us, and like, what are the things we want backstage, whether it be alcohol, non-alcoholic drinks, food, etc. We heard from our friend Stacy in Bellingham, who recently toured with Juliana Hatfield, because she's a client of hers, and so she had a little bit of insight on what writers look like when you're doing kind of a multi-city tour around the world, and how consistent they are. So I will share that with you on tomorrow's show.
Okay, so far our rider: pigs in a blanket, Topo Chico water, handmade Luke and Andrew dolls, vegetarian sandwich, six-pack of Miller Lite, tall boys obvs, and a one bottle of Jim Beam. That's the current rider.
I was thinking about that, the dolls thing, and I know we're being cheeky.
Probably
but
two sets of dolls?
Yeah, I just feel like not... Because, I just sort of feel like... I also wonder if people who deal with riders always see, you know, like if people who don't... Mm-hmm. People like us who maybe don't deal with writers that often, the first time you always try to put some joke in there. Like, I wonder if putting in the joke about dolls of us is like the equivalent of like trying to, like, I don't know, make the cashier at the grocery store laugh when you say, no price tag, it must be free. You know what I mean?
Oh, you think I was really going to submit this list with the dolls on it?
I wasn't sure. I mean, we went on a 2-month exploration of a radio show that we created a pilot for that you wanted to do simply as a spoof against our colleagues in public radio. So I have no idea what you're up to.
Oh, yeah. No, I would probably take that part out. But every food thing I'm definitely going to leave in there.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything
that
else
we
is
decided
good. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. I know, because the person, again, I said this yesterday, the person who's going to get this list is going to be a production, like a very kind of, let's say, entry-level staffer, who's just going to have the bad fortune of getting like the list of – they're going to be running to like Costco or whatever. I guess it would be the Costco and Squim. They're going to be running to whatever the closest place is and just all day getting crap for the performers, the real performers, who I'm sure will have real riders.
Mm-hmm.
So I will spare them the Johnny and Bobo dolls. But everything else – I'm serious. We should make this list as long as possible, because – You miss every shot you don't take, so we might as well see what they'll give us.
Yes, I agree. Can we call the show Ride or Die?
Yes, we absolutely can. I love it.
Who doesn't like puns now?
Okay, I guess that's it, because we need to wrap things up, and then we need to record an episode of our new ancillary project, McMillan Men.
That's right.
So we should probably call this the end here of this. a production of this episode of the program. I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you for being part of TBTL. Thanks for telling your friends about it. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. So please check in for that. Until then, enjoy your Wednesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.